Welcome to this podcast called Curious About Recovery. I am Kirsten Honeyball. I am your host. And in this podcast, I will be diving deep into eating disorders, which are complex and challenging to navigate. So whether you're a sufferer, a professional, a family or loved one of a sufferer, you can join me as I get curious by interviewing professionals, chatting to eating disorder survivors, and sharing my personal experience with an eating disorder so that you can better understand various perspectives, remove stigma, hear inspiring testimonies, and simply get curious about all things eating disorder related. I would like to put out a trigger warning. These episodes explore the topic of eating disorders, and some content may be triggering to listeners. Topics explored may mention, but are not limited to, trauma, diets, food and body types, suicide, mental illness, substance use, self-harm, violence, gender identification topics, and more. Please take care before listening to any episodes. It's important to note that this podcast is not aimed to diagnose, treat, or cure any form of mental illness and should not be seen as a replacement for treatment of eating disorders. Everything said here is expressed in relation to personal and professional opinions, and listeners should be encouraged to view these episodes as an open-minded exploration of various possibilities and perspective rather than hard facts and solutions. Please take what applies or resonates with you and leave the rest. And if you're struggling with an eating disorder, don't hesitate to reach out to me at kirsten@kirstenhoneyball.co.za. Today we have Lori Haas on the show with us from Arizona. She is a 500-hour certified healing emphasis yoga therapist and has been helping people for many years to have a more nurturing, kind, and loving relationship with their bodies, as well as teaching them how to calm their nervous system. She loves creating and teaching therapeutic yoga tools based on the needs of the individual, the group, or the organization that she's working with. And she works with the foundation in embodying peace, calm, and connection. In her personal time, she loves hiking with her support tribe, enjoying a great cup of coffee, traveling, and studying topics related to neuroscience, the polyvagal theory, mind-body psychology, and trauma-informed yoga. So I definitely think we're going to have a wonderful conversation today because you just ticked all my boxes. Those are definitely things that I am fascinated with as well. So thank you for being here and thank you for being on the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So it's really great and refreshing to have a completely different perspective. I've spoken to dietitians, I've spoken to therapists, I've spoken to people who run organizations and stuff, but I really love the work you do because you're a yoga teacher, you know, and so much of the work that gets done in helping people develop a healthy relationship to their food and body, people tend to focus on the thoughts and the mindsets and the thinking and the emotions. And yes, that's great. But there's this whole element that we tend to forget about when wanting to heal the relationship with the body, which is the body, you know? So, I love the work you do. It's really amazing to have this fresh perspective. Maybe I could just dive in and say, you know, what drove you to pursue yoga as a career and why are you passionate about it? And if you could tell me a bit about your journey.
Absolutely. So I've been in the mental health field as a licensed psychotherapist for 30 years. Love it. Passion. I get to be a part of people's journeys every day. And then about 20 years ago was my first experience on the yoga mat. And I remember it like yesterday. It was so vivid, this experience of being with gentle movement, linking it with breath, having an intentional mindset of being in a place of presence and peace. And then everything was in sync. And the feeling, I still get chills of it today, was really this coming home. I just felt in my body with my breath in that present moment. And I knew in that moment I would teach someday. And then further down the road in teacher training, I recall reading all the yogic sutras and the philosophy and the principles of way of living, treating self and others. And really this eight limb part of yoga is moving towards a connected presence. And when I was reading and studying and all the training, had another visceral experience of pretty much tears and just feeling like, wow, this ancient practice really has been a root of current day mindfulness and psychology. And I just felt like it gave the explanation for what I was feeling already. So I'm like, this is something. This is part of that toolbox beyond traditional psychotherapy. And then we might get into this topic on polyvagal theory. And that's been my more recent visceral missing link experience. It's like the neuroscience is now explaining the why behind therapeutic yoga. And just like you were mentioning, you can't leave out the body in recovery from eating disorders because the self-harm, the disconnection is happening in the body. So it's really about becoming friends with the body, which is kind of a thing that I talk about. So very long answer, but as you can tell, passionate, you know, firsthand experience. I just knew this was, you know, this was something powerful.
The crazy thing right now, and this is completely off topic, but so I tend to toward more of an anxious nature in the person that I am. So when I show up to things, I show up usually on a higher level of energy. Sometimes it's a negative, sometimes it's a positive. But immediately as you started talking, I had this feeling of my energy just slowed down in a positive way. And it was like, wait, I've actually got to drop into this moment and be present in it. And it's amazing that just you as a person and the way that you're speaking and the way that you carry your energy has just kind of transferred through the virtual platform that we're on. And I feel calmer just speaking to you. I'm just like, wow.
Thank you so much for sharing that, as I'm right there with you. I think my orientation has been an anxious mind and body and perfectionism. Those are kind of things that I need to stay on top of in self-care. So it's a reminder we're not alone. And this, what we call co-regulation, even though we're in different countries, and we're speaking a universal path right now. It's an embodied experience. So thank you for sharing that. And that's cool that that vibe has come across, because the other thing I would say on that is sometimes I just feel like I'm a vehicle, and this ancient practice of yoga, when I go there, it's just speaking through me. And I can get out of the way. The ego, the perfectionistic self is able to take a back seat.
It's funny that you say you're a vehicle, and this is also off topic, and I am going to actually get back to the yoga and the you and all of that. But the name of this podcast is Curious About Recovery. And when I abbreviated it, it's CAR, which is car. And I was like, hey, maybe this can be a vehicle for like how people can get from one place to the next in their recovery. So that's super cool that you said that. Yeah.
I love it.
The work that you're doing, so amazing. And I've felt those times when I've been on my yoga mat and I've just been like, this is where I'm supposed to be doing the work. You know, and I'm definitely going to be picking your brain about the polyvagal theory, because I'm fascinated, but I definitely don't know enough to be able to like speak into it. But something that comes up for me is this, I think the struggle that a lot of people who come into recovery and are maybe thrown into a certain mindset that is not a balanced one, and they have a fear of any form of exercise, of any form of body movement or anything, because maybe they've come from a history of exercise addiction or over-exercise or something like that. And the idea of moving the body is like a very scary one to drop into, because what if they go too far, you know? I mean, I know like yoga can be a very, very challenging practice. You can take it too far if you're not nourishing your body, if you're not listening to its cues and all of that. So how do you as an individual, and maybe how do you help people find the balance in how you're supposed to practice the art and the philosophies of yoga?
Great question. Yeah. I mean, it's really back to that. It's the embodied experience. So it comes from, you know, an education and, you know, sharing of what might be going on in terms of the instructions. And it's an invitation to explore, to discover, and in very small, you know, connected experiences. So there's lots of different types of yoga. So I'm not really talking about kind of fast-paced or heated yoga. This is more about a mindful-based practice, which means, you know, noticing, being present, and really starting where you are. A lot of times the centering of the work that I do in the start is really checking in right now. Where am I right now? And not to just change that because maybe you want to or you think you're supposed to, but to start noticing, and what's happening off the mat shows up on the mat. And then we can use that as a practice, and how to maybe after that noticing, maybe it's bringing a softening. Maybe it's bringing the breath to a place that feels tense, tight, scared. And then some of that shifting consciously versus unconscious then is able to be taken off the mat. So it's a very supported in invitation and choice and an empowerment, and noticing is the mindfulness-based aspect of it. So I'm not sure if I answered your question totally there, but
I think what I take from that is this idea of yoga doesn't only look one way. You know, there are lots of elements of yoga that are very important to take into consideration, and that the meaning of yoga is to develop that nurturing, graceful, and gentle approach to oneself and one's noticing. I once heard someone say, one of my favorite yoga teachers, he said that if all you do is take a breath, you've practiced yoga. And I was like, that's so cool. Yeah. And you speak into this idea of, you know, what's happening on the mat. We're connecting with our bodies. We're noticing. And we're, at most times, I'm assuming, coming to try to not judge what's going on. And I guess that this would be a way to practice then how we deal with life, you know, if we make the space for ourselves. But at the same time, you're working on, and like you've said, you're working with the central nervous system, you're working on neuroscientific level, like with things with the polyvagal theory. So, you know, let's jump in. Can you tell me about this theory and what it is and what the body's role in mental health is?
Yeah. Let me pause back and go back a step, if you don't mind. I mean, to me, at the base root of what yoga means, like the person said, you know, is the breath, really means union and unite. And I've simplified it in a way that works for me is connection. And the way I see people going through eating disorders, it's a form of disconnection. It's been an unconscious coping mechanism for stress to turn the volume down on heavy emotions or too much or too overwhelm, and a way of escaping or, you know, protecting, things like that. So then if yoga is connection and eating disorder behaviors are disconnection, then we're trying to bring the disconnect into connection. And then that's really where the healing and the blossoming comes from. And it's with tools. So it's not like they're going to face, you know, the lion's den without tools. So then in the polyvagal theory, it really, you know, I'm still so fascinated with it and learning myself. And I just see the layering of it. So it's a little bit hard to put in a nutshell, I guess, but it's based on Dr. Stephen Porges' model that was created about maybe 20 years ago and worth looking up. But it's about how our nervous system is reacting on our behalf. So when we're in a safe and a connected sort of space, we feel more socially connected. Humor and laughter and so forth can come in. We feel more grounded. When we're in the part of the nervous system that is called sympathetic, there might be mobilization urges. There might be active overdrive or fight flight sort of experiences. So that anxious sort of nature can be there and be present. And down the ladder, as they describe it in polyvagal, is what they call dorsal vagal, part of the nervous system, where the overwhelm becomes too much. And there can be like a collapse or a shutting down, an isolated, a depressed sort of energy going on. So then if you, now that I've said somewhat of the polyvagal, if you go back to what your question was on that, how would you say it?
You know, taking in this information about the polyvagal theory and what we know about the body's almost stress response, I think, to on a physical level, you know, how does this play into helping someone who is experiencing maybe triggers in an eating disorder, or perhaps high anxiety or depression, or just the food and body relationship in general? So how can one take this idea of movement into practice in their mental health journey?
So that's a great question, a big question. So part of the polyvagal theory is starting with that education piece. So people start to know where they're at, what's activated in their nervous system. And then second thing, you know, what is triggering that and how to evolve beyond that. So then if someone's in a sympathetic or anxious sort of state, I think in one of your questions you had posed before we talked here, so if someone's on the mat and they're just having a really hard time settling into stillness, sometimes that can be in that aspect of eating disorder where staying active, go, do. But if we look at it from a protective part of the nervous system, relaxation might feel scary. It might feel uncomfortable. It might feel foreign, or something has given a signal to stay on alert. So to me, it's really, there's a phrase in the, or a word in the psychotherapy world of called pendulation, which is kind of moving towards what's might be uncomfortable or scary with tools, breath, mindset, posture that supports a calming space, but while addressing some of the anxious energy, and then kind of like a pendulum moving back towards a rest point or something that might be more calming to someone who's active, can actually be a little bit of mobilization. So like even with food, if someone's eating, you know, what are the ways to help ground before eating, to feel the breath is able to flow freely, to be in that embodied space that we've talked about earlier of coming home. So it's like setting up I call it layering approach, the breath, the posture, the mindset or mantra, and then focusing on intention and attention to help support what you really want to be feeling. That's kind of the base of yoga therapy to me.
I can definitely hear that and how I might picture that being helpful for an individual where they're, because, you know, I mean, an eating disorder is very stressful, and it can, the emotions, especially a person who is experiencing eating disorder recovery, there might be a whole bunch of new emotions that they're experiencing, new things that they're having to cope and navigate through. And you know, for instance, in my early recovery, I used to get panic attacks if I couldn't get rid of the food that was in my body, you know. And to be able to say, you know, you're having an emotional or a mental response, stress response to this thing that's really, really scary, which is food and your body. But there's a way that you can actually use your body as a resource to move out of that state of stress. And then once you're out of that state of stress, because there's no point trying to talk a person out of a panic attack, but bringing you into a space of calm with the tools that you use in yoga, you are then able to go, okay, I actually am safe. This thing that I'm afraid of, this meal, this person, this emotion is not as scary as I might have thought it to be at first, because now your body has come out of the fight or flight or the shutdown state.
Exactly. And I love how you just said that. It's like, to me, this toolbox is something that you're carrying with you. And that's where it's the base for becoming friends with your body, because our body is really housing our emotions, which is just a connection to the experience. And with this more maybe enlightened view or resources through polyvagal lens or yogic philosophy, we can shift posture, invite in breath, calming the breath by slower breaths, starts to still the mind. We can bring the breath up to this place between the brows as a place of clear seeing. And all those resources, think about it, is all housed right here in our bodies. So journals are great. That's, you know, an external tool that we can use. But the more we can become friends with our body, I call it inviting in your inner best friend, your inner supporter, your inner compassionate self, you know, anything that resonates for someone to have kind of a higher way of looking at being there for yourself. Yeah.
So I guess in saying that, the way to break free from the bondage of our fears in our bodies is to drop into them and actually see them as a part of the process rather than something we have to get away from.
That's right. And it's really a learning. It's because to me, an eating disorder is an unconscious coping mechanism for stress. And in the book chapter that I had written with Carolyn Costin, which was an amazing experience, the title was On Flowing with Emotions. So emotion just stands for energy in motion. And so we're trying to connect with that energy, and our breath is usually the first order remedy to go in there to that facing of those feelings. And so it takes away some of the scariness of it. And it becomes like in a more masterful way. Like I can feel what I'm feeling, just like the breath, I can flow with the feelings. I notice, feel, face, they will release. It loses what I call emotional weight. Emotional heaviness is then able to feel released, and then people feel lighter in their body and their mind. And I'll just say one thing on in my training of therapeutic yoga, it's very simple. What is the person feeling now? What do they want to be feeling, experiencing, or embracing? And then the yoga practice with philosophy, breath, gentle movement, mindfulness, meditation, all those eight limbs of yoga, bringing that in, it shows through the body experience that, let's say, peace, if that's what the person wants, is possible. And it lets the mind know that peace is possible. So for that anxious energy type of person, then they'll slowly start realizing that sensation, that feeling of calm or peace or relaxed. So it's such a beautiful thing. It's like one of your first questions here today is it's embodying the practice. So if we just go from a top-down approach, cognitive behavioral types of orientations, there's value in that for sure. Bringing the therapeutic yoga in goes from bottom up. And it has the whole range from the body experience to the mind experience. So super cool.
I love the fact that you mentioned that chapter that you worked on with Carolyn Costin and Joe Kelly called Yoga and Eating Disorders, Ancient Healing for Modern Illness. And it speaks into, again, this idea that you spoke about earlier in the podcast, is there's these ancient healing practices that modern day psychotherapy and whatever is actually based on. Would you like to speak into a little bit more of these practices and what they've taught you and how you help teach other people these things?
Well, I don't know if this would be a time to do a little experience of a tool. Are you?
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Okay, because then you can kind of hear just in a simple form, or if your viewers are up for this experience, just to kind of hear the guiding. Of course, it's only instructional, but it's invitational and education, you know, format.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yes. Okay. So flowing with and noticing and being present, if we just start with placing the feet on the floor in a seated position, focusing the mind on all four corners of the feet. So literally the mind's focus goes on to the big toes, the pinky toes, the inner heels, the outer heels, and just feel that gentle rooting down, noticing, feeling supported by the earth coming up to greet you, and allow the spine to lengthen. And when the spine lengthens, it lets the nervous system know that there's space for breath, and feeling the shoulders release away from the ears, and starting to invite in just a noticing, perhaps a closing of the eyes or a slightly downward gaze. So back to that noticing. What am I noticing now? And it's just an observation without judgment or reaction. So this is a meditative quality. Just a noticing. And then a noticing perhaps what you would like to invite in. And this is where we can use the mindset or mantra to bring the breath lifting from the belly all the way up through the ribs, lungs, into the heart space. In the exhale, we'll go in the same direction. The belly releases the ribs and the heart. So that base breath is what we call diaphragmatic breathing. And that base breath, when the exhales are longer, it invites in calmer. And I know we're in a shortened format here, but if you imagine then bringing the breath higher up through the throat area into that place between the brows, you can start cultivating that mindset. So perhaps it's a place of peace. And noticing how peace breathes. And for some people, again, that might be uncomfortable. You just notice that. You say hello. And sending that compassionate, ventilating breath to any place that could use a little extra love. So just flowing with the breath while the feet are grounded. And the mindset is cultivating something that you want. Hopefully giving a taste of some examples in the book. And as you perhaps move back towards opening the eyes, if they're closed. So these are just a little sprinkling of therapeutic tools. We got the grounding in the feet, the lengthening in the spine allows the space for a calmer breath. Speaking of polyvagal, would be accessing the vagus nerve, which is the master nerve from brainstem, throat, down to the major organs, impacts on digestion. So when we're in a calmer state, that can help appetite, digestion, a sense of connection to our experiences. So the other piece to that, like, is the mindset, cultivating the mindset and inviting in how that breathes, essentially. So it's like a, like you said earlier, a bit of a stepping into or a choice then. You know, can I try that on? Can I try peace on? So the chapter was such a highlight of my experience to be among many authors who brought their expertise and, yeah, just flowing with emotions. So they don't have to be a scary thing. It becomes, I could do this. I know how to do it. Yeah.
That was such a beautiful experience. And if you are listening to this episode and you didn't follow through with that, I highly advise you to rewind and do it, because I'll share with you my experience. The first thing when you were speaking about the feet is that I noticed my presence, and I noticed that I tend to have this feeling of floatedness, and that's especially when I'm anxious or tired or whatever, and I feel like I'm floating around in the world, and I suddenly went like, oh wait, I'm actually here, you know, and I felt my feet got warmer and they felt supported. And then when you ask like, how are you feeling? My brain went, I don't know how I'm feeling. Oh, I'm so overwhelmed. I'm so tired. I'm so tired. And then when I was going into what I wanted, I had this immense feeling of gratitude. And at the moment, I'm wearing these closed back headphones. So when I breathe in, I can hear my heartbeat really loud, like doo doof, doo doof. And I just heard it was the only thing that I could hear. And I was what I dropped into this idea of having gratitude for my life, you know, the fact that I am alive. And I was just like, it's so often I go through life forgetting how grateful I am to exist, you know, and what that means for me. So I want to thank you for that experience. And I'm sure everyone else had their own experience. But this speaks into this idea of bringing yourself into a space of groundedness, which I guess in a way also looks at the idea of safety. You're not going to be still unless you're in the shutdown phase. You're not going to be still when you're in danger. You know, you're going to be running. You're going to be trying to hide somewhere or something. So I'm thinking how this kind of concept of the ability to create space for stillness, create space in the physical body, in the lungs, in the stomach, in the mind, in the spine, and then to create space for yourself is such an important element of recovering from an eating disorder. Because one of the hugest things that I believe I experienced in my life was that taking up space wasn't allowed, you know. My existence, my essence, my humanness, my everything that I wasn't allowed, or it was too much, or it was too painful to sit with. And like you've mentioned before, it might be a scary thing to consider the thought of peace or what peace might feel like. I mean, I've worked with clients before that have tried yoga, or I've done a meditation with them or something, and they go into a state of panic because they're like, I can't be this still. I don't know how to, you know. And so, you know, working with that. So it becomes really important in yoga, or for anyone who's practicing it, and especially in eating disorders, to be incredibly mindful in the process. Mm-hmm. And you are a master mindfulness-based yoga therapist. And can you tell me how you've witnessed the importance of this element of mindfulness in recovery in a mental health aspect or from an eating disorder?
I think it really speaks to some of what we've talked about already. It's learning how to be in and with our body, our emotion, our experience, you know, from a place of kind of hand-holding or presence. And that's not always easy for people going through eating disorders, because their body has become what I call the unlucky recipient of, perhaps they've had trauma or negative or critical or shame from others. And then it's become internalized, and it's housing that eating disorder critic and shamer and judge and perfectionist, right? So bringing in that compassionate side is not an easy one to jump to. So it's a process, similar to what we've said, of kind of slow, being present, feeling the feelings, being able to release them. Simple ways to release might be arms up and flicking out the wrist is a great way to release on the exhales, kind of wiping down, wiping off, letting go. And then it comes back to cultivating what you really want. So I'll never forget another highlight has been teaching like a warm-up yoga to folks at the National Eating Disorder Awareness Week walks. And again, another chill moment in my body where I look out into the sea of people who are there who've either struggled through eating disorders or know someone who has. And one of my favorite questions is to place your body in a position that would show us what it feels like when in that eating disorderish darkness space. And I don't know if you can imagine or know what your body might do. You want to take a guess or should I just say what people did?
I'm already in like a very scared ball, huddled, completely contracted, completely, yeah, it's like I'm hiding.
Correct, right. So I've asked this question over many, many years and it's pretty universal. So I'm looking out and 350 people are in some version of contracted place. And think of this as protective, the nervous system's trying to protect in some sort of way. And then I'll have people imagine this, the 350 people, I'll say, I want you to peek up and look around. And the 350 people see, one, they're not alone. And two, the level of disconnection from others, disconnection from self is there. And so then I call that ED pose, eating disorder pose or posture. And then we shake it off, we lift up, shake it off. And then what do you want to be feeling, experiencing, embracing? And you want to take a guess at that, what that might be like, look like?
Expansive, I can imagine.
Yes. So think of even your word expansive. It's some variation. The heart space is open. There's an upward gaze. A lot of people will have their arms up overhead. We call this I won pose. And it's not winning in terms of competition. It's winning in terms of, you know, living life. And then I'll say, I want you to look around at the 350 people and see what you see. And so when I look out and I see this sea of expansion and people are connecting and they're there, you know, supporting this cause of walking together. So it's really about that process, noticing when the contracted yet protective yet destructive way of coping, because from polyvagal lens, my theory is the eating disorder behaviors are a way that people are trying to regulate their nervous system, regulate their emotions. They might have learned that going to food was comfort and provided some safety from others. But those of us who have gone through eating disorders know that's short-lived and it's temporary. It's not truly nourishing. So it's really about having that experience of noticing when in that contracted state, what is the breath really doing? There's really a clenching, a contracting, I can't breathe, but that's become so strengthened. And then moving to this more expansive way of being, which is exactly all the eight limbs, yogic philosophy, breath, movement, posture, withdrawal from senses into the higher limbs of yoga, concentrating, meditation, and a place of oneness. So the oneness, then we're back to coming home. So then it's not about escaping. It's about being in and experiencing and being present. And I got this. It's like, I call it becoming friends with your body, and your viewers can't see the visual, but it's like one hand is up, the other hand's the other. This is me, this is my body, and it's connecting together instead of a butting of heads. It's a connection. It's saying, hey, you're my fellow traveler, body, and let's journey together. So that's probably a very long answer, but it's really about coming back in and being present, connecting. And I love your word spaciousness. So many times, you know, folks, part of their eating disorder is to shrink away. And that can be in an anorexia sort of space, nervosa, where literally shrinking away. It can be in a overeating, binge eating place, becoming more hidden. And the spaciousness is about having a right to exist. And the yoga mat's a beautiful place because it becomes the visual boundary as well. You picture two yoga mats, kind of like one on top of the other in a cross shape, and make it as a big circle like a hula hoop. And that becomes the boundary. So how can I stand here tall in my shoes, like Brené Brown would say, the shame researcher, and be here right now with my breath in this moment, which is oftentimes how I start a yoga practice. My colleague says, find your breath and you'll find yourself. It's pretty cool. So teaching, even the other highlight has been teaching for mental health clinicians. So similar to that need to walk, I would look out into this sea of psychiatrists and dietitians and therapists doing these simple therapeutic yoga tools at keynote presentations with the International Association Eating Disorder Professional Symposiums. And I just see people come to a place of calm and connected, and it's pretty awesome.
There's so many things going on in my brain right now. When you speak, it's just like I'm absorbing every single word, and it's resonating. And I know how much truth there is in what you're saying. This idea when you said you were physically witnessing people going from contraction to expansion, and that just highlights again to me, your body knows sometimes more than you do. You know, I was in a session with a therapist, and she was a wonderful lady. And she asked me to find a position that my body felt powerful in, that it felt like it could conquer, it could overcome, it could whatever. And immediately I wanted to be upside down on my head. I needed to be in a headstand. And so now, even to this day, when I'm feeling overwhelmed, when I'm feeling like I can't handle things or whatever, my first thing to do is I flip up into a headstand, and I suddenly feel like, okay, I can get through this thing. I can do this thing. And as soon as I'm denying myself the ability to connect to my body that way, I very quickly fall into cyclical thinking, into fear, into obsession, worry, even insomnia. And just what you're speaking into right now is this idea that our bodies are these beautiful communication tools, and we're not going to be able to hear what they're saying if we don't give time to listen to them.
Yes, I call that a body anchor. So an anchor can be as simple as a mudra in yoga, is a physical gesture with the hands. Bringing thumb, pointer, finger together is a way to connect to this pineal gland. The place between the brows is a place when we were doing the breath, it can bring a higher, clear focus. So there's lots of different mudras. A body anchor, I'll ask people, place your body in a position, like she said with you, that embodies strength. And a lot of people will pick Warrior Two pose because it's very grounding, yet lengthening through the spine. And, you know, it's a peaceful warrior, a place of facing fears and so forth. But you can pick any, and it's not even an official yoga pose, that embodies what is a calm pose, child's pose. Anything forward folding can be calming to the nervous system as long as the breath is still flowing versus contracting. Back bendy things, experiences have a more expansive feel or vibe. So body anchoring what you want. And so your example is just beautiful. Right? And then you can cultivate it in your mind. You may not have to break out in a headstand in the middle of some conference you're doing, although that'd be fun. You can cultivate the memory in the mind, and it allows the body to feel strong and, you know, experience what you want to feel. So it's powerful.
When you spoke about this expansiveness, the first thing I imagined myself when I expanded, my arms went open. And I was like, this is the place that when I'm moving away from the eating disorder, this is where I am, right? And the first thing I thought about was, well, if I'm this expansive, I have to hug someone. Like my body felt like the arms need to go around another person, you know. So, I mean, I know a lot of the time this may be experienced for some and not for others, but this feeling of physical embracing and how important that is in the healing process. And when a person isn't able to literally go and hug someone, how does one feel that embracingness in one's body through yoga?
Obviously, today we have virtual platforms of that kind of connection, which, you know, maybe has been sparked more out of the pandemic. So in polyvagal theory, it's really any sort of place where there could be some social engagement and feeling a part of the hormonal aspect of oxytocin released and feeling a safe, secure attachment bond. So it's like being with maybe like-minded people or practicing together or, you know, even pets, animals that can have that warm, fuzzy feeling back. Yeah, it's part of what they call co-regulation in the polyvagal theory that is really important.
And then just out of curiosity, in yoga, what does the position of headstand kind of symbolize? I know that every single position has a specific purpose and a specific meaning. So out of curiosity, what is the headstand?
Oh, that's a good question. And I haven't really thought of a headstand in a long time. But any inversion poses are actually bringing the blood flow to the brain. So it can actually be stimulating or somewhat of a natural high, if you will. Not that I'm suggesting everyone go out and do a headstand, but it also, to me, it is a pose that really brings together another foundation principle of yoga, which is this place between effort and ease. And you can see it in terms of mindfulness-based eating and exercise and so on. It's when there's too much force, too much effort, too much go-go in life, you know, we feel stressed or overwhelmed or anxious sort of energy. When there's not enough, when there's too much ease, then might feel lethargic energy. But a headstand represents when you find that place that there's a lifting of the feet to the sky and you're in that place of the between the yin and the yang symbol. It's that place between effort and ease, just like a namaste hands. If you're, you know, pressing together without too much force or too much ease, you find the oneness. So headstand, you have to find the oneness or you will fall, right? So that's what I would say just off the top of my mind. Yeah. It's a practice in finding that balance.
Thanks. That's that really resonates into, I guess, the challenges and the things that I experienced for my personal life, and probably why it resonates with me that position is because that's what I try to embody. So that's great.
And that really is. It's a balance.
Interesting. My body knew better than me.
That's how it goes sometimes, right?
Yeah, I did a speech the other day at a wellness thing, and basically I guided the group that was there into moving into a position or moving the part of their body that their body was asking to be moved, right? So I did a whole process, and I was like, you know, get listen and, you know, connect and all the things that you do to get yourself connected to your body. And then I said, okay, now that body part that you've connected with, move it in the way that it's asking to be moved. And I tell you, not one person moved. There was one girl who started moving her shoulders around and she looked so happy. But it was like there was this fear to go, my body's asking to do this thing. And it might not make logical sense, but I'm going to listen to it. You know, there's this resistance to the art of listening to one's body. Where do you think that resistance comes from? And how can we overcome that fear of just listening and connecting with ourselves on a physical level?
You know, that's a great question. I think in my own experience, I think it comes from kind of messages either that I've heard or I've internalized to kind of stay rigid or to not flow, you know, to be perfect, or it's things might be so contained or constricted or something like that. So I think even just the seed planting of what you just described there is a door opening. So it's almost like permission. Then how can I become connected with my body if that's, you know, what I really want? One of the most beautiful things that I've seen in my practice has been, I'll say, I know when people really are living beyond the eating disorder. The eating disorder was just a teacher on their path, because I start seeing their teeth. It sounds kind of strange, but when I first start seeing people, they could be in a rigid posturing, a closed posturing, needing to either take up less space or, you know, there's just different examples here. But when people move through the process of starting to be in their body, then they have freedom to flow and to move. So it's, I don't know if I'm so answering that question. I think it's the same sort of stuff as like little steps, and to model it and have the experience. And sometimes the first experience is very uncomfortable. Some of those folks might have felt, okay, all right, so am I supposed to move or something? Versus like, I want to move. So it might have just been a seed planting, I guess, is to me, like, you know, a start of that.
Yeah, it's beautiful, the stuff that you speak into about this idea of flowing and moving with the body. And another thing that I really love is that yoga teaches is mantras. And so can you tell me a little bit about how these help, and maybe one or two of the ones that you use in your practice or in your personal life, and how they help you?
So a mantra is a statement. In my training, it's usually in the form of an I am statement. So it's really that same sort of thing of, what do you want to cultivate? So for some folks going through eating disorders, it's not an easy process to skip from negative self-talk, body talk, into loving, kind, accepting sort of talk. So to me, it's like a step system. So it might be cultivating a mantra that first noticing or stop signing the negative talk or chatter, and then moving to a place of neutral or more accepting sorts of thoughts. So I am here right now might be a more neutral, present, accepting thought. And then as bringing in all of these, you know, tools, then moving towards the loving kind sort of thought. So it's really, again, back to that, what is the intention the person's wanting to bring? So I am peace. One of the things I like to do is a moving mantra. It can be as simple as putting both palms over the forehead. So it's an I, and it expands the heart space if you're in a seated position. The am is like arms up over around like a sun. Peace will flip palm over palm at the heart space, and you solidify in your word. So it would be I am, the arms go up overhead and around, peace. And so as you can hear a slowing of the message, you could bring in a color, an image, the breath of peace. And then there's that layering approach again. So the mantra becomes the intention, and then creating the practice that supports that, then it becomes embodied once again. So not always easy, but you start where you are. So it's hard. Have you found that too? Like, it's hard to jump from, you know, people going through years of negative self and body talk, right? Like, so I think of it as a stop sign. And is there a way to stop, maybe ground and send the breath, and then move to your next moment, and then eventually moving towards those neutral sort of mantras, and then ultimately moving to the intention that you really want to be experiencing or creating. So mantras, I think, are pretty cool.
Yeah, I love this idea of moving to a space, because I think what can happen is if you try to just throw yourself with these positive statements that you don't believe, you're going to experience cognitive dissonance. You're going to experience probably more resistance, more anger, because I remember looking at myself in the mirror and going, I can't say I love myself, you know, but what I could say was I'm getting to know myself, you know, which is something I believed and I could say to myself, and it was believable. So this idea of going to a neutral space first, and then when you're ready, going to a space of positive thoughts or ideas that you want to cultivate for yourself. So definitely for anyone who has heard about things like affirmations or mantras or anything like that, if you're struggling with it, go to a space of neutrality first, and focus on the slowing down of the thought, the slowing down of the thing that you're saying, so that it can resonate and it can sit and you can be with it. Because in the process of eating disorder recovery and in yoga, stillness needs to be a priority. And when you're finding resistance to that stillness, don't be angry at it. Observe it and think, how can I move through this resistance? Or how can I be with this resistance? And then how can I cultivate the state and the feeling or the thought pattern or whatever that I wish for myself? It feels like this hour that we've been speaking to each other has just flown by. It's been amazing talking to you. So a couple of questions just before we wrap up. I'd love to know if you have any message or any words that you'd like to share with people, maybe not who have never done yoga, who are in recovery from an eating disorder and would like to explore this. What could you say to them to encourage them or to help them grow on their journey?
I would just say, you might have heard of the phrase, I know Carolyn Costin mentions it, who's been a pioneer in this field of eating disorders, that recovery is possible. And that where we started today, that yoga means connection. And this is really a path towards evolution and reconnecting with body, emotion, where you want to be living, like truly, you know, what you want to be experiencing. So that's what I would say. Connection is the key to recovery. And when people are there, they're like I was, there's a coming home, there's a in-syncness, there's an aliveness from a polyvagal lens, they're in a ventral vagal space where, you know, it's like at the Nido walk, when people are in that expansive pose, they're able to see life from a different direction. So it's possible, and just continue to show up and find providers, or, you know, yoga is just one way. But if anything resonates on this topic, it might be, you know, trying to find that avenue.
Yeah. Okay. So is there anything that you're specifically working on at the moment? And how can we get in touch with you if we're trying to, you know, if we want to follow you on social media, if we want to contact you?
Yes. Well, part of my wish list right now is really kind of bringing this 30 years of practice and knowledge base on the road, essentially. So I would love to travel. The ultimate might be like a villa in Italy, if I really put it out there, or, you know, some beautiful place to have women's retreats. And, you know, bring these educational tools and practice of moving towards self-acceptance, body acceptance, calming sort of tools. And then I still love teaching to clinicians, or being a part of, you know, workshops or events that really share the passion and have people learn. I call it a sprinkling of yoga tools. So they're really simple based and mindfulness based. So that's what I would love to keep doing. Yes. And then how to get a hold of me, Lori Haas Yoga is my Facebook page. Would love to connect with anyone there. You know, say a shout out of if you've listened to this podcast, and then I will post future offerings. So Lori, LoriHaas Yoga. And my YouTube channel is the same, Lori Haas Yoga. The website is yoganourishment.yoga. And then the Gmail is on there, yoganourishment@gmail.com. So thank you so much.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I will definitely be going to your YouTube and utilizing that as well, because I think that I'm going to get a lot of benefit out of that. And so anyone else who wants to get hold of Lori, you now know how. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciated this experience. It's been so refreshing, so different, and so informative. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And what we say in yoga is a namaste, which just means honoring the light in you and all around you. So a namaste to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. If you have liked it, share it with people who you think might benefit from listening to it as well. Don't forget to go to my Instagram page called @CuriousAboutRecovery to find out about upcoming episodes or to browse the episodes of the past. You can also follow my page called @KirstenHoneyball, where you can get inspiration for your eating disorder recovery.